Right, so today's agenda is here. And first up on the agenda for the day is we are completing the web payments use case review. And let me get the use cases and put those in the IRC. So the last use case we ended on was talking about a sort of a short, memorable payment identifier that can be used to map to an individual's identity. So we were talking about if a payer, Jack, wants to send Jill some money, he could ask Jill for her short, memorable payment identifier, and then a protocol could be used to translate that identifier into a perhaps like a URL that would allow his software to send her some money. And we finished talking about that use case, and the next use case that is up is related to that, which this use case says Gunther, who is the payer, enters a short identifier that he believes identifies the widget store, who is a merchant, into a UI. The UI displays a certificate of authenticity that indicates the short identifier is in fact for the widget store. Gunther uses the short identifier to make a payment to the store. So this is very much like the previous use case with Jack. In the previous use case, it was sort of a peer-to-peer payment, and in this case, it's Gunther trying to pay a store for a widget. And so what we're interested in this use case for the credentials group would be that there's some protocol or mechanism that allows you to enter in a short identifier into a UI and get back a digitally signed piece of information that indicates this identifier is in fact for this store, such that a user looking at a UI could verify that they're going to be paying the right person or the right entity. And we went through, and when we reviewed this in the web payments community group, we looked over some feedback that the previous wording in this use case was a little confusing as to who the parties were. And we've cleaned that up, and I think that was the only use case, the only feedback we had from the payments group on this use case. And does anyone here today have any feedback for this use case or any questions about it?
Dave, this is Eric Corp. So okay. In the case of a store, would that also be any entity that's just trying to transact that person? So for example, if the university was trying to register a student for application to a college, would that store be the university's unique ID?
Yes. Yes. So this is just an example of this use case in action, and it obviously it came from the web payments group, so it was focusing on financial transactions. But yes, it would work the same way. It would effectively be a short identifier can map to just about any entity. So in the education space, it could be a university.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, if there are no more questions with this, we'll move on to the last issue that we had to review from the web payments community group. And this one was a design criteria. I pasted that into IRC. And this says a primary entity, a buyer or a merchant, et cetera, with access to a credential service sets a second identity, a buyer, merchant, et cetera, also as a backup. And so they set it as a backup for accessing their credentials should they inadvertently lose their ability to access the credential service. So this is for accidental loss of password or two-factor authentication device. So this use case is just about someone is using some service and they have password access to it, for instance, and for whatever reason they lose their password, very common use case. This use case was about the ability to recover access to your account. And what we were mainly concerned about with this use case was that we felt like it was overly complex to try and put into the standard. It could be implemented in a number of different ways on an individual identity or credentials provider basis, and we can let best practices and the market sort of decide the direction where this moves. So the original feedback was that the wording was a little bit confusing, and I think we cleaned that up, and we're going to leave the use case in there as something to consider, but it does seem like it's the complexity it would add to the standard doesn't really bias anything, because it doesn't really do anything beyond the state of the art today, and it would probably be best to allow individual credential and identity providers to sort of decide for their users what kind of features they offer for account recovery. Are there any questions or any feedback about this last design criteria? Okay, if not, then I don't think Tim has joined us, but what we can do is go ahead and, as a group, just look over the use cases that he has presented. I'll put the original, let me change the topic here to Tim's use cases. I'll put the original emails into IRC that Tim sent out, and then Manu went in and sort of categorized the use cases to break the problem down a little, to make it a little easier to digest. And here is Manu's email in IRC. So when I was looking over Tim's use cases, something that struck me was that I felt like maybe there was a need to have a brief discussion about what the group thinks the definition of credential should be, so that we can make sure that we keep use cases in scope. And we don't want to end up with any sort of scope creep here with the use cases that we put in here, and will help us be a little more clear out about what we want to cover in the first iteration of the standard. My personal view of what a credential means in the context of what we're trying to standardize is essentially that a credential is a set of provably authentic statements about an identity. And by provably authentic, I mean that one can demonstrate that some entity has in fact endorsed the statements. And technically speaking, this is implemented using cryptographic digital signatures. So when I hear the word credential, I think we're talking about this set of statements that we can prove someone actually did endorse or assert the veracity of. And so that's my view of what a credential is. And does anyone have any disagreement with that, or do they want to add to that, or have any other clarifying statements on what they think a credential should be?
So this is Eric Korb. There's a couple of things around credentials, word proof, and the word. So the word proof is a difficult word because it can mean multiple things in a credential. So we have to be careful about the use of that, and perhaps Mary can elaborate. But the word evidence could also be considered proof. So in the world of a digital credential for education, you could provide proof, which would mean that here is the, but we call it evidence, which is actually artifacts that go along with a credential that shows what you demonstrated. And then the idea, I prefer the word claim, something that you're claiming. When you say that I'm claiming that I have a driver's license in the state of New Jersey, then the proof is the digital signature that or perhaps even evidence, which might be a link back to the original document that was issued to me. So I just want to make sure that we think about words there, and maybe Mary could add some words there as well.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a very important point. I think we also need to make sure that we distinguish between proving that someone made a statement and the truth of the statement itself. So I think when you're talking about evidence, I think we're actually talking about the truth of the statement itself. So if you went and you looked at the statement, you could follow some evidential links to see, oh, yes, it does appear that this statement is likely true, versus just some party has said that the statement is true. And it's important to, when I talk about, when I was talking about digital signatures, I was just talking about specifically the ability to say, some party has in fact asserted that this statement is true. That is, of course, doesn't mean the statement is true. If you trust that party, then you might assume that it is. So it is important that we make that we do have the distinction between whether or not we're just proving that someone said something or proving that what they said is true. That is important. And I don't know if Mary did have anything to add to that.
I appreciate all the people offering me time to speak. Frankly, I'm scribing and cannot even think to do chewing and walking at the same time. Thanks anyway.
Right. Yes. Well understood. Okay.
That's fine. I'll just elaborate, Dave, a little bit more on what I thought Mary might go after, is that in the world of education, or at least in some of the credentials that we are what we've been dealing with, the word evidence usually deals with something that has to do with a, so for example, it would be tied to a portfolio, okay? So for example, if I'm in education and I had to do an art project, in my portfolio, I might actually have an example of that art. It's a very simplistic example, but it's one that we all can sort of associate with. So the fact that I got my art certificate or credential, and here's the actual piece of art that was used as the submission to receive that, that's sort of what evidence is about in the way that we use it. It's typically tied to a portfolio. It also could be submitted. It could also be evidence of submission of a test. So if you submitted an exam, that could also be evidence as relates to what you've had to do to complete that.
Right,
I don't know.
Right.
Maybe Bill Gabbard has some more words on how they sort of classify that information, but I think it's important that we think about these words.
Yeah. Hey, Eric, thanks. I thought you did I think you're doing a nice job describing from an educational perspective. My focus is that many of the credentials that ATS produces actually are very high stakes and are required credentials for individuals to be accepted into the United States and the UK and Australia for higher education. And you constantly refer to the evidence thereof and the sanctity of that evidence. And our focus on those high stakes is really quite critical. So it's the issuance of those credentials and the
Bill,
supporting data that makes it that needs to be secure.
Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. So I just wanted to add that from from an education perspective, that it's really the supporting evidence and the security of that supporting evidence that gives the credential its weight.
Right. Yes, I think these are all very good points, and they speak to the underlying nature of credentials and how this technology will be useful.
Can I interrupt this?
Sure.
This is Mark. I'm sorry to interrupt. but I don't know if you're planning on moving on or if you're going to address the current subject.
Go ahead. We're still addressing. Go ahead.
Okay. Parallel with a government document, such as a license, in the transaction, I think that you originally were talking about, you don't simply say, yes, I have a license, right? You have to present the document. And that presenting of that document is the proof for that you have it. Now, in order to get that document, you had to demonstrate certain behavior, certain knowledge of the law of driving, and you have to pass multiple tests. You pass a written test and you pass a driving test. So in the analogy with education, wouldn't the document be either the transcript or the degree itself, the sheepskin that was endorsed? I appreciate the fact that there are high-stakes tests and other credentials that lead up to the issuance of a degree or a certificate, but it seems to me the presentation of something that you have that is vouched for by an accredited authority, the university, that it's a credential is a degree or the transcript. Is that not the case?
I think that's partially correct. Well, I think what you said is perfectly correct, but there's a slight twist to that, and what that twist is the proofing of the identity of the person claiming that credential. There is, and everyone has read, stories over the last several years about people impersonating others to take these high-stakes examinations to get the appropriate scores to be utilized. So it's not just the credential, but it's the combination of the credential and the proofing of the person that claims that credential. It's that pair.
Makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Right, and what that actually might just be is yet another credential. For instance, if you were presenting one of these credentials and you're trying to impersonate someone, the other credential you present is could be a driver's license and your face. So you have a photo ID and your face right there, and that's just another version of a credential to assert that the credential you're holding that says you have a certificate of something. Of some importance, it is in fact your certificate because you have another credential that proves your identity.
Right. It comes down to counterfeiting, basically. Yeah. But you're right.
And
yeah.
So the point I was trying to make with respect to differentiating the actual the assertion that a credential is true versus the evidence from it is that at its core, when we're talking about the technology for this. The most basic type of credential you could have would just be a set of statements about an identity that have been digitally signed. The actual evidence for that might not be associated with that credential for you to look at. So this sort of speaks to the point where you might present a credential that says, yes, I have a driver's license in this state, without having to present the information on the driver's license itself or any of the evidence that was used to prove that you should be given a driver's license. And so it's certainly true that we want to, it's very important that we support the ability to attach evidence to credentials, and we support the ability to associate two credentials, one that asserts someone's identity in one way and another that asserts that they have a certain certificate. That's certainly important. But if we're talking about just the core, most basic kind of credential, I think then all we're saying to achieve a core credential is a set of statements that are digitally signed by some party that the user of the credential can decide whether or not they trust. If you trust that party, then you assume that party has done what they need to do to in order to issue that credential.
I would agree with you. I think where I'm I just don't know if we use the word prove or claim. That's where I'm sort of hung up.
Okay. Understood. So we might need to do some wordsmithing with the definition, but I do think that we have a general idea for moving forward in trying to understand that a credential is essentially a set of statements that have been digitally signed so that someone can look at that set of statements and know that the signer of those statements did in fact, technologically speaking, they are the owner of a private key that that placed that signature on the credential. So what that means is that you know that that the person that issued that credential did in fact issue it.
Yeah, I think it's that's, just where I've looked at it is the proof is the beholden upon the issuer, right? We trust the issuer because of their private key infrastructure. And when I use the word claim, I tend to look at that as the recipient. The recipient makes the claim, but they can't really prove that until the issuer signature is on that page. So that's sort of how I look at it.
Okay. Well, I think with this information, we can go forward and sort of look at the use cases that Tim has presented, and see if these if they fit in within the scope of how we're viewing credentials and what we're trying to standardize. So I'm going to go ahead and start going down the this list, this consolidated list from Manu's email, and. The first thing we have is a design criteria that sort of talks about it tries to make a generic case out of credentials. So this is the design criteria text. I paste it in IRC, and so I'm going to go ahead and paste all of these examples in here. So I have to wait a moment while those come across. And I'll just go ahead and read down this list, and then we can discuss whether or not we think that these types of statements should be supported in the work that we're doing. So the types of credentials, different types of statements that we could support in here are things like I have an education degree in field X, I'm a student studying in field Y, I'm a lecturer at University Z. I'm a citizen, or my date of birth is this. I have a prescription or a right to purchase a certain medication. I'm an emergency health professional. I have a valid first aid certificate. This is my vehicle, or this is my registered trademark. I have a yacht club membership. I'm a Webism. I work at a fast food chain. Please authorize my discount. I work at a telecommunications company. Or I'm a lawyer or accountant, or I'm a lawyer or accountant representing this client. I think all of these they sort of fall into a generic scope for credentials, where based on the fact that we've decided to use the technology like JSON-LD to represent these credentials, we can use any number of vocabularies to make these sorts of assertions and the credentials that we want to support in the standard. So I think all of these are definitely supported by the technology, and I do think that pretty much we could go down and talk about individual ones if people would like, but I do think that most of them fall very easily within the notion of credentials, which is what we just what we were just talking about, which are simply statements about an identity that can be digitally signed. Does anyone have any specific feedback on any of these?
No, it makes sense. It's the beginning of a list of what could be thousands of different entries, but I think the concept is well represented.
Right. And this is another reason why I think it's very important that we've chosen a technology like JSON-LD to handle this, because we're not going to be able to think of every possible thing that somebody wants to create a credential for. And by choosing JSON-LD, we allow domain-specific vocabularies to be used to figure these things out. Okay. So if there are no other comments about that, then Manu suggested that there are three use cases here that we move over to the web payments work. I agree with his analysis on that, but I'll go ahead and read these. There are three use cases here. I purchased this TV within the last 12 months. This has to do with checking warranties. I paid this bill on this day, or my insurance for my yacht is paid. These sort of fall into the same thing as the statements above, but they also have a component that is sort of like you're referring to sort of a digital receipt of some kind due to some transaction. And I think that really fits into the web payments work better than it fits here. All right. Now that we're through that, we start getting into the, some more of these more specific use cases that I think will require a little bit more discussion. So, and this also has to do with the previous discussion about defining what a credential is and trying to make sure we don't extend the scope too much so that we end up not being able to standardize much. So in this use case, it says enable access to patient storage for particular individuals. And so this is, what Tim has written here is, I authorize this doctor to write to my patient record, or I reauthorize this doctor to write to my patient record, or emergency health providers can access my patient records.
Real quick, that reauthorize, Tim said, should be deauthorize, remove
okay.
permission for.
Okay. So in this case, I think we're in sort of a gray area where, this is my personal opinion, I think we're in a gray area as to whether or not this should fall into the credential work. I think that we could view this as, we could view authorizing a doctor to write to your medical record. If we're going to view that in the context of credentials, it sounds like what we're talking about is saying your medical record is just another collection of credentials. And allowing your doctor to write to your medical record is allowing your doctor to write a credential of a certain type to your identity. And I'm not sure if that's awkward modeling or not. Essentially, what that sounds like to me would be allowing a doctor, for instance, to write a statement to your identity that says you've been diagnosed with disease X, which I'm not sure. I guess you could take that credential and present it to try and obtain a prescription or something like that, but it sounds to me more like a better way to model that would be to receive a prescription from a doctor and then take it somewhere, the prescription being the credential. At the same time, perhaps something that might be useful is receiving a credential that says, I've been vaccinated for X, Y, or Z, which will allow you to go on some kind of overseas travel or get access to a country. And maybe it would be useful in that way. So I'm not exactly sure how well this use case fits into the credentials work. I can see some edge cases where it fits, but maybe some other people have some feedback on that.
I sort of agree with you. This is Bill. My perspective is that this is almost permissions, you know, providing
right.
permissions and permissions management. And I don't understand, at first look, where this still fits in with credentials, but maybe there's more information that I'm not understanding about it.
Okay. Manu, you're on the queue.
So I think there's a big overlap here with the read-write web and the web access control list stuff that they're doing, and I agree with Bill that this stuff is not, it's kind of on the periphery, meaning that the permission stuff is kind of external to the credentials stuff. The way that we're dealing with permissions, at least in the credentials work, is we're basically saying, there are two ways of accessing somebody else's credential. Either one, you ask them directly, can I have access to credential X? Or the second one is you say, I would like access to credential X on an ongoing basis. We don't have really any deep thinking on how you should do access and permissions and stuff like that. Some other groups are working on that. I think we should expect that the other group is going to want to kind of push their standards in the work that we're doing and try and make it kind of a more generalized approach. But I think we should basically hold off on trying to solve the whole web access permissions problem, right? And it, that might mean that enabling arbitrary data access is not in scope for the work that we're doing. I don't know how what other people feel about that.
I definitely agree. I think we've got a separation of concerns here, which is we're talking about being able to alter these credentials and at request that they be stored somewhere, but we're not talking about, I don't think, telling credential or identity providers or these the entities that store this information how they should go about telling their users or getting information from their users that indicates who is allowed to write to their account, who's allowed to write credentials to their identity. I think it's important that we have a protocol for allowing those rights to happen, but I don't think that we're interested in designing the access control list or whatever mechanism the individual identity provider uses to interact with their user, to whatever user interface and whatever model they present to their user to allow their user to configure who can read and write to their account. We're concerned with the protocol that allows you to do the writing, but I don't think that we should be concerned with the entire access control list methodology and all that stuff.
Great.
I think we also have to be careful that we don't mix up the idea of reporting reports versus credentials. They sometimes get, you know, I think a prescription is not necessarily a credential. I think it's a one-time use event. I'm not sure if you agree with that, but I think we have to be careful that we're not talking about reports, talking about a credential that lets make a claim. I like the idea it says, that I'm making a claim I'm allowing my user to have access to my report, and I want to verify that that is, in fact, that doctor. But then I would want to look at that doctor's credentials to prove that that's they say they are. But that's where I think it ends.
Right. And I think actually as we go on, you brought up the notion of not having a sort of a permanent credential. I think as we go on to these use cases, there will be other cases where we'll be discussing whether or not we want to support sort of these transitory credentials. So I think we'll get more to that as we go.
Fair enough.
Does anyone have any more feedback on this use case? If I'm not wrong, I think the general consensus here is that it's sort of out of scope for the work we want to do. We do want to support certain aspects that are related to it, but we're not that interested in trying to also standardize access control lists. There are other groups that are working on that. That they can, those technologies can be integrated with the credentials work that we do here. All right, let's go ahead. I'll paste in the next use case. And so this use case says a sender transmits some data to a receiver, and the receiver transmits a digitally signed certificate of delivery to the sender. And I think this is an example of a use case where we're starting to get into transitory credentials, because we're talking about you sent some piece of information to somebody and they send you back this statement that says I've received it. I'm not sure what the utility of that statement is. There are a number of different use cases. I guess we could try to add specifics for this. I guess you might want to try and prove that at some later date you could prove that you did in fact send some, for instance, legal document to someone and they did say they received it. And in that sense, it could be a sort of a permanent credential. Does anyone have any thoughts or feedback on this use case?
Yeah, this seems like receipt confirmation from a traditional e-commerce type of transaction. And the use case itself, as I read it, I think the last few words, which currently say certificate of delivery to sender, might really be better worded as certificate of receipt from sender.
Right.
Would this be similar to the use case, or similar to the, like in the in actual use, like DocuSign, like at the end of a DocuSign, and you get a an actual it that shows all of the handoff back and forth. Is that what we're talking about?
I think it could be very similar to that. This use case could cover that, yes. I think it's fairly open-ended. Go ahead, Mona. You're on the queue.
I think there are two things that this could break down into. One of them is, do we want to specify some kind of API that a sender can call to get a certificate of delivery, like a COD type thing? I think that's effectively what we're talking about, is some kind of COD type thing. Well, no, that's cash on delivery, isn't it? There's something where you can get a receipt from the U.S. Post Office when something was delivered. So that's effectively what I think we're going for here.
Proof of delivery.
Proof of delivery, thank you. The other thing might be the actual, you know, item, that piece of paper itself, a digital version of that piece of paper itself. I don't think we should do the former one. And the latter one, I think we already support with the technology approach that we're doing. So you know, if we're saying should this go in version one or later, I think we should punt this to a later version, just because this is, I don't know if we, it's a useful use case. I don't know if it's something that the credentials folks really, you know,
higher up the transaction, because if you're sending something, this thing, that would be part of a higher level transaction, the ACNAC, or acknowledgement and receipt from there. The credential part is sort of just more of the proof of who's getting what and who's delivering what. So I think the acknowledgement is more at the commerce level. So if I'm getting asking to receive a credential, the credential itself is part of a bigger pack, right? It's just a subset of a transaction.
I think that's certainly true for the commerce case. I guess there could be an argument here that this could be used to transact without any actual money being involved, in which case you could still use e-commerce APIs to accomplish that, but maybe you wouldn't want to. It seems very open-ended for the first cut of this technology. Trying to specifically support this use case. I think we already support the notion of writing arbitrary credentials to a particular identity, given the authorization from the identity holder. And I think that covers the aspects of this that we would be interested in at this time?
Well, certainly with the TrueCred APIs, we have this idea of claims. So at the point of claims, I get an offer of a credential, claim it. At that point of claim, isn't that proof of delivery?
Yes, it could be, but I think we'd be specifically talking about storing the fact that you claim something as a credential itself.
Okay.
Just in general, I agree with Monu's feedback that it seems like this is out of scope to a certain extent, and what we do have in the technology does support what we could take away from this. I don't know that maybe some kind of rewording or something of this use case would allow us to keep it in here. Otherwise, I feel like it's out of scope. It's too generic of a use case for us to say, oh yeah, this clearly fits in with what we're trying to do. It's too easy for us to say, oh, this looks like e-commerce or, you know, something to that effect. If there are no other comments on that use case, we can move on to the next one. All right, in the next use case, it says the credentials issuer seeks to share private information, like web resources, with a credentials holder. And then there's some feedback that I also paste in IRC from Manu, which says, why is this use case not covered by SSL, and do you mean that the credentials issuer needs to write information to the credential holder's online storage? If we're just talking about writing credentials to the credential holder's online storage, we definitely have that idea in the technology. And I would think that we've previously covered this in other use cases. So I'm not exactly sure what this use case is about. I think it's supposed to be about a focus on privacy, that you're only sharing some very private piece of information with someone else. And that might be related to saying to the sort of data rights stuff that Tim has been talking about, where you say, I'm only sharing this with you, and when I share this credential with you, you're not allowed to share it with anyone else. But that's just conjecture on my part. Does anyone have any thoughts on this use case? Okay, well, if not, we'll wait for Tim's feedback on that and move on to the next one. All right, this use case says an individual is fined for traffic infringement and seeks access to video and or audio evidence recorded by law enforcement. And this means is sought to do this privately as to avoid the material being published on YouTube. So this sounds like a fairly standard case of using some credential to assert that you are the person that should be allowed to view this evidence. And I think that fits fairly well with the generic idea of what we're trying to standardize here. I don't know that it actually needs to be reworded at all. We could be more specific and say you present a specific credential, for instance, your driver's license, to request access to that to the evidence. Does anyone have any thoughts on this?
No.
Okay. So I think that one's okay. We'll move on to the next one. I'll paste the use case and Manu's feedback into IRC. This says a confidential document is being distributed for the purpose of disclosure and mutual agreement. It's fairly generic. Manu's feedback is, why can't the distribution happen over SSL? Do you want the document to be transmitted over SSL and for the contents to be encrypted to the receiver and then have the contents digitally signed and re-encrypted to the sender? My overall view on this is that it's not at all clear that this has to fit into the credentials work in any way, and that this just isn't a typical transmission of some piece of information from one party to another using over an encrypted channel. Does anyone have any of their own feedback? Manu, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I think the only way that this could be interesting to the group is this notion of using the secure messaging spec to encrypt a credential or a document and send it to someone else. I mean, the disclosure bit is confusing, because that's like, you know, if you want to distribute a confidential document for disclosure, then just put it behind the password protected thing or something with some kind of access control in front of it, right? So that has nothing to do with what we're doing. The mutual agreement portion of it might mean, you know, use digital signatures to digitally sign that document. But again, you know, the only commonality it has with the credentials work is the digital signature on the information. So again, I don't really understand what this use case has to do with what we're doing in the credentials group.
Right. And I think
any way you break it down.
I was just going to say, I think this goes back to our original discussion over what the definition of a credential is. I don't think we're even specifically talking about making statements about an aspect of someone's identity. We're just saying that there's a confidential document out there you want to transmit somewhere. And we are using digital signatures in this group, but and we are using encryption and cryptography, but that seems like the only connection with our work and this use case. We just happen to be there's some overlap in the technologies you would use to accomplish them, in the cryptographic technologies. So I think we should mark that one as out of scope. All right, so here's the next use case. It says, I have a hybrid TV service, broadcast plus broadband. Here are my identity details, and I would like to control who and how this information is used for targeted advertising and other purposes. Mona's feedback is we might want to remove the hybrid TV service bit because the relevance is not clear, maybe because of the advertising angle. You don't want to be advertising you don't want to be advertised to using your identity information, but you need to use it to unlock the over the age of 13 channels. Sort of just questions about why that particular service was chosen, which we don't know because Tim is not here. I guess in this use case, this is again about data rights. This is about being able to, maybe this is about being able to present a credential that says, I should have access to these certain channels or certain aspects of a service, and then, but please do not sell the information about my age or anything like that to some other company for advertising purposes. And to that extent, it sort of fits in with what we're trying to do here, being able to present a credential to get access to certain services and to work with the data rights vocabulary and data rights group stuff that Tim's working on to say these credentials should only be used in these ways. So I think we could probably clarify why this particular service is used in this use case and clean up the language a bit. And so hopefully we can get some feedback from Tim on that. But after that, I do see how it can fit in with the credentials work. Does anyone have any feedback? Okay, then we'll move on to the last use case from in this email. And this is, this intelligent light globe is connected to my home. I would like access to the light globe to turn it on and off remotely. Honest feedback is this seems like a secondary use case for authorized access to an Internet of Things device. And it says, I don't know if we need this one, as others should cover it. I'm in agreement with Monu's feedback. It also just sort of feels like it's just another sort of access control issue, where access control might be determined by presenting a credential. So does anyone have any other thoughts on this use case?
I agree with you.
All right. Well, I think there is that was the last one in this email, and then I think that there is another email that had some more sophisticated use cases. From memory, I think most of them actually fell under sort of e-commerce use cases, so they fit better with the web payments group. We should double check that, but. You know, if some of them do apply to this group, we can put that on the agenda for next time. I think for today, I think we're going to be done because I don't think we can go ahead and get into those. There's only about 4 minutes left here on the call. Does anyone have any other thoughts or questions regarding any of the use cases or other things we covered on the call today? Okay. Well, then I think that's it for today. Thanks, everybody, for showing up.
Great. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Bye.
Bye-bye now.